It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Long considered one of America's most beloved comedians, Bill Cosby is scheduled to perform in Pittsburgh this coming February. However, Mr. Cosby has been receiving a lot of negative press lately for allegations of sexual misconduct. Bill Cosby is the latest in a long line of childhood heroes and lovable icons mired in scandal. Pop culture contributor Joe Woese joins us for a look at the history of scandal, which goes way, way back. Joe, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Always nice to be here.
In a recent piece you wrote for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, you wrote that Bill Cosby is not the first mega icon to fall from grace.
No, he's really not, but he is certainly one of the higher profile ones. You know, you can trace this all the way back in Hollywood to the Fatty Arbuckle story, which is just one of the first really big Hollywood scandals that took the nation by storm.
And this is an interesting and very sad story because the allegations turned out not to be true in his case. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who don't recall 1921 when when Fatty Arbuckle was at the height of his silent film career. But who was he? What did he do on film? And how did he get into trouble?
Well, Fatty Arbuckle was this beloved silent screen comedian. He was this heavyset guy, but he would do, you know, very graceful slapstick. And he was just this jovial character that everybody just seemed to love. He was such a great character. And he had just signed a big contract extension and decided to go celebrate at a hotel up in San Francisco. And a woman was found in his room, sort of drunken and disheveled. And that then turned into a huge scandal. After they eventually took her to the hospital, she passed away. And then the story turned into a story of rape and murder. Unfortunately, you know, the truth behind this is that the accuser, the woman who actually accused him, was rather well known for being involved in a lot of extortion plans. She had over 40 counts of extortion against her. So bad was it that they actually didn't let the main accuser testify at the trial. And he had three different trials. The first two was a hung jury. And then the third one, the jury actually apologized for what Fatty Arbuckle had been accused of and everything he went through. The newspapers blew it out of proportion. It was headlines everywhere, you know, details that were fabricated, that were just very explicit. And then in the end, he lost everything. His career was over. And, you know, he died in his 40s, you know, of a heart attack. But it really was, you know, in many ways, a broken heart.
So what are some other examples of superstars down through history falling from grace?
There's a lot of different kinds. There's these ones of these, you know, obviously innocent like Fatty Arbuckle. And there's ones that are sort of the big deal. I think Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, is a great example of that. For those who don't remember, Paul Rubens was
Pee Wee Herman
and got caught in a act of, shall we call, self-pleasuring in an adult theater.
Not the first or the last.
No, absolutely not. But because he was associated as being a children's TV star, it of course just blew up everywhere. And part of it was the image of him with long hair and a beard in this mugshot that the police released to the media. And but he recovered from it very well. He waited a couple months, went on stage at the MTV Awards dressed as Pee Wee Herman and said, "Heard any good jokes lately?" And he had become the butt of so many jokes on late night television. So, you know, he turned that around. But part of the reason
– And he got a standing ovation.
Standing ovation. And then he said, "That's so funny, I forgot the laugh," one of his trademark phrases. But he turned that around. But part of the reason he turned around is the public really didn't care. It was a victimless crime.
So is Paul Rubens the best example of a celebrity surviving and coming back from a scandal?
You know, I think he's one of the better examples. You know, there's so many who don't recover or so many who just fade. They aren't prosecuted. The charges are dropped and they just sort of fade from the public eye.
Are a lot of these cases about – do they have more to do with perception than reality?
You know, a lot of it has to do with they are characters. They are people who portray themselves as having a higher moral value. that, you know, Cosby is probably the best example of that. You know, he would criticize young African-Americans for the way they talked and say things like pull up your pants. He was very demeaning to young people on this, you know, based on this moral authority of being America's dad on the Cosby Show. And when those people fall from grace, I hate to say that there's a certain enjoyment in it, but it is sort of this feeling of finally we put that person in their place.
Well, and whether you agree with what Bill Cosby – with the way in which he admonished younger people or not, it wasn't he – weren't his intentions at their core what wasn't his intention to help people improve their lives?
Yeah, it was. I mean, you look at the show Fat Albert, you know, that told these, you know, stories of his childhood youth and had these strong moral values. And, you know, it may well have been. In fact, yes, it definitely was this idea of I want to show a better example. I want to lead by example. But when you set yourself up to lead by example, you better be Mr. Rogers because they're going to find a weakness otherwise. You know, he's one of the ones we can hold up and say, you know, there was nothing touched him because he didn't do anything that would cause us to question his morality.
Well, and allegedly there are reasons to question his morality, certainly. Is the Bill Cosby scandal particularly devastating because popularity has spanned generations and because of what he has meant to people like you and I?
Yeah. I mean, generations have now grown up with Bill Cosby. He is very much a part of the American experience. He is a legend. He's an icon of comedy. You know, he is held up again as this wonderful role model up on this pedestal. And for a lot of people, it's heartbreaking to see him fall. For others, it's there's a little bit of pleasure in it.
Is the Bill Cosby case maybe the biggest example of all of the maybe the you know you mentioned Fatty Arbuckle, which in the 20s was a big deal, but is this the biggest of them all?
I think it's becoming that. It certainly is becoming that. It knocked some. You know, pretty horrible ones out of the headlines. You know, Stephen Collins, of course, from Seventh Heaven, who is not only accused of but admitted to acts of child molestation. There's nothing more horrid, you know, than you can imagine. And it sort of – Cosby comes along and that knocks that right out of the headlines and no one's talking about that.
This may be the biggest, but is there one even stranger – you know, all of these are stranger than fiction, I guess. But is there one that's stranger than or even more shocking than Bill Cosby's?
Yeah, I think Kevin Clash. Kevin Clash is Elmo on Sesame Street. Was Elmo on Sesame Street until several young men came through with accusations of sexual relationships when they were underage. Not only did it out him as a gay man, which is actually the spin he gave it as a positive spin. But it also brought on this question of why should this man be talking to our children, albeit through a puppet? So it was a very uncomfortable – the accusations were withdrawn, but by then he had lost his job at Sesame Street and has slowly been trying to restore his credibility, but it's gone.
So is there a lesson to take from all of this?
Don't get into trouble. You know, that's about the only lesson you can take from it because we live in an age where hopefully if you commit a crime, you're going to get caught. But if you think you're burying it, you're hiding it, it always rises to the top. You're going to get caught eventually. And we live in a society where there's no privacy for celebrities. You will get caught.
Right. But what if in the case of – as was the case with Fatty Arbuckle, you didn't do anything? And then there's that old Mark Twain line about how a lie circles the globe half a dozen times before the truth gets its pants on?
Yeah. Well, once there's chum in the water, there's a feeding frenzy. They look for a little piece of something to build on and then, it becomes headlines. And then it grows and grows and grows. It almost doesn't matter what the truth is. It's whatever is in print is the truth. So, it's so tough. You've got to get out in front of it and diffuse it as quick as you can. And a lot of that just has to do with being honest.
What do you think of the media's role in all of this?
The media plays a huge role and always has. I mean, there is a certain amount of sensationalism that occurs. They want more viewers. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, we covered Anna Nicole Smith's death for an entire week, a woman who was famous just by nature of being famous. So we latch on to this sort of cult of celebrity, and we just keep it going. The headlines stretch out. With the Cosby case, it's been all too easy for them because every week there's a new person coming forward with accusations. And you know, considering how long his career has been, boy, if he has one accuser for every year, he's going to be in a lot of trouble.
The cult of personality. Culture contributor Joe Woes, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, PR professional Saul Markowitz on the intricacies of damage control. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Each week, viewers tune in to the television show Scandal to watch Olivia Pope, quote, handle and fix the reputations and images of high-profile clients. However, in real life, what does it take to repair one's image after falling from grace? Saul Markowitz, president of Markowitz Communications, navigates us through the intricacies of public relations damage control. Saul Markowitz, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be here.
So, Saul, as a PR professional, you've seen your share of public scandals.
Quite a few.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate the current scandals involving Bill Cosby and Gian Gomeshi?
I would think, you know, when you're having a scandal, there's no such thing as having a scandal that's just a 5. I think every scandal is at least a 5. And I would say these two, especially the Cosby one, I've been really following that one, it's at least a 9. At least a 9. And I'll tell you why, because there, you know, here's what happens usually with a scandal. There's this whole thing about trying to spin the truth. Let's spin the truth. You know, you hear that all the time when you're watching a debate, an election debate, and they say, okay, the debate is over, and you know what side you're on. I mean, if you're a liberal, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, you always think your side won. And where do they send you after the election, after the debate's over? Let's go over to the Republican spin room. Now, the word spin, which I try to I keep it out of my vocabulary, to spin means to spin the truth, which means to lie. It's a known fact. And I think what's happened, you know, so you're going into the spin room, you're saying, okay, let's go into the lying room and let's find out what they have to say. And it's really kind of silly. But the same thing with this whole Cosby thing is that, you know, for years, you know, he built such a brand for himself as the, you know, he's the TV dad and he sells really good Jell-O. I mean, he's one, and I love Cosby. I think Cosby was extremely funny. But behind the scenes, he was doing, which I truly believe things are happening, because it seems to me like it's, you know, you hear the same story over and over again coming from different women. So my feeling is I see, okay, one time you may hear something, you think, okay, maybe it's not true, they're just trying to embezzle, whatever it is. And then, but you start hearing 15 to 20 people saying the exact same story. The problem that Cosby is having is he's not saying anything. I mean, that's our, then, you know, here's the way it works. If somebody is guilty, if someone said to you, you did something really wrong, and you hear it once, okay, that's bad enough. You hear it 2-3 times, wouldn't you stay on top of a roof and scream, I didn't do that? And the first time that, you know, this kind of came out with Cosby recently, it was on an NPR show, and they asked him about this, and he just shook his head.
Right. This was right. On Weekend Edition.
Right. Weekend Edition.
Scott Simon asked him the question, and with the disclaimer that I take no great pleasure in doing this. And then he asked the question, and Scott Simon actually described Bill Cosby, because there was silence, and Bill Cosby was evidently
shaking his head
no, and Scott Simon was describing that. So then, what are the first steps that need to be undertaken? Or, you know, in the case of Bill Cosby, since that seems to be what we're really latching on to here. What, so if you're advising him, what do you tell him to do?
Well, the first thing I would say, I'm going to give you real quickly 4 quick rules of PR, which would have helped him, which will help him actually right now if he decides to do something. But it doesn't seem like he seems like he's sending it off to his attorney just to give some statement that really is kind of demeaning to the victims of this whole thing. But that's another story. I think he needs a PR guy too. So first thing I would say to him is, number one, tell the truth. I mean, I know it's come on out and just fall on your sword. Just tell the truth. People respect people who tell the truth, even if it's really, really bad. just come out. I tell this to my clients all the time. Just you'll get much less play and press on something if you just come out and tell the truth. And I can go through a bunch of different crises that have happened in the past that would have worked really well for the person in charge. So that's number one. Number two is stop saying no comment all the time. You know, when you say no comment, I always look at that as an example. When someone's coming out of the federal courthouse and they put a camera on them, they go, "Did you kill that person?" And they go, "No comment." And I go, "Yes, you did." And that's it. I mean, you really believe that that's what it is. The other thing, too, is, you know, my third rule is, you know, if the media says to you, "We'd like to have a comment, we'd like to hear more about this," if you don't know the answer yet, just say you're going to get back to them and actually put everything together. And the fourth rule is get back to them. Tell them exactly what's going on. The problem that Cosby's had in the past is that he's becoming more reactive than proactive. I think, you know, in a crisis, you want to be as proactive as possible. You need to tell your story before somebody else tells your story for you. And what's happening with him, like the Tiger Woods situation, is they're waiting too long. They waited too long. I mean, now it's at the point where too many people are now branding him as the guy that did this. So.
And we are living in an age of social media, and at the beginning of his scandal, Gian Gomeshi posted his explanation of events on his Facebook page. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
It's a bad idea. I mean, the idea of using, you know, anytime, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, or any type of the social media, it stays there forever. So you can't really, you know, you can go up there, you can read it, and you can read it your own little way. You know, I always say the best way to deal with a good crisis, like his situation is, you know, he's a radio guy. So get on the radio. You have your audience in front of you. Use what your medium that you're good at, and people trust you. They trusted him as a radio guy. And so get out there. And
in his case, he wouldn't have been able to do it as the host of his show, because by the time that he posted that Facebook message, he had been
released.
He had lost his job at the CBC. So he would have had to have maybe appeared as a guest.
Somewhere, right. Either a guest on radio or TV. TV is always the best.
Which is and you're in a situation where somebody else is in control of that.
Right.
But is that still a good idea?
It's a good idea because people need to look at you. They need to see your face and they need to say, "Do I trust this person?" I mean, the idea of, you know, you can write anything you want on Facebook, and, you know, if you're going to believe it or not, that's cool. But I always tell my clients, too, it's really important to, as I'm saying, tell the truth. Come on out and look at people, just like David Letterman did, which I thought was great.
Yeah, now David Letterman, as you just said, did just that. And here's an example. We're going to play a clip from his late show with David Letterman, where he says, talks about an affair that he had. He cops to it after someone attempted to blackmail him about 5 years ago. Let's listen.
The creepy stuff was that I have had sex with women who work for me on this show. Now, my response to that is, yes, I have. I have had sex with women who work on this show. And would it be embarrassing if it were made public? Perhaps it would. Perhaps it would, especially for the women. But that's a decision for them to make if they want to come public and talk about the relationships. If I want to go public and talk about the relationships, but what you don't want is a guy saying, "Oh, I know you had sex with women, so I would like $2 million, or I'm going to make trouble for you." So that's where we stand right now.
It's so great.
Well, yes,
well done.
He manages. He's got his audiences with him. Now, the one thing that should be said here, and he was up front, and there's more to what he had to say than just what we played. But it wasn't just about him having sex with women. He's married,
right?
So it was, you know, extramarital affairs, which some people frown on, and some people say, "Well, that's none of your business." And clearly, if you blackmail somebody and say, "Pay me $2 million not to say anything about this," you are, you know, not only, as David Letterman said, a creep, but also, you know, an extortionist, and you're violating the law. So David Letterman does this. Was it risky for him to do it?
It was perfect. I'll tell you what, I kind of use him as an example of how to do it right. I mean, I'm going to compare him real quickly with Tiger Woods. So there's Tiger Woods, who had this issue where, you know, he he so happened to have, you know, his wife, they say, took somebody's golf clubs and smacked him over the head because she found out he was having some affairs with other women, and he decided to hide away for about a month or so. And like I said before, the whole idea of being proactive, not reactive. So he allowed the media, including the National Enquirer, which you never want to get involved with, magazines like that, People Magazine, and they decided to build the story themselves. So they listened to everybody else, and they built his new brand for him. All right, so by the time he got back and decided to do that press conference, which I can talk an hour about if you'd like. But
well, let's listen to a little bit of Tiger Woods at his press conference.
You'll hear the difference between the two.
Okay, let's play the clip of Tiger Woods.
Every one of you has good reason to be critical of me. I want to say to each of you simply and directly, I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in. I have let you down. And I have let down my fans.
Letting down your family. What about that one?
Yeah, right. Well, it doesn't work as well without a laugh track.
No,
does it?
Work. But here's the difference.
But he was very... It's
very staged.
Yeah. People had a hard time believing that he was sincere. But here's the other difference, too, is that... Letterman, in Letterman's case, he had a villain, right?
Right. But here's the thing, too.
And Tiger Woods had the tweets where he's saying, my wife is on to me. Erase all those text messages.
But the villain to Tiger Woods were all of his sponsors. See, that's the thing. The reason he did this is because he was losing sponsorship. I really believe that. I think that the way it was being handled, that he probably would not have done the press conference if he wasn't losing all the sponsors, and suddenly his brand was going down. I think he was forced to do the press conference. And the other part of it, too, I was actually watching this with my staff, and it was so easy to predict what was going to happen next with his press conference. So I remember there was one point where I said, okay, stand up and make sure you hug your mother. Okay, hug your mother, close up. I'm hugging your mother. I mean, it was so staged that I even listening to it on the radio, and it was kind of interesting. It's different as you're hearing it than seeing it. But you can hear how he was enunciating certain words, and he was just trying to make it sound so sincere. Then there's Letterman, who I'm a huge fan of, I just want to tell you. And there was Letterman, even if he didn't have the guy that was trying to embezzle money off him, Letterman is such an amazing guy that he didn't need this. You know, he's the kind of guy that just says it, which I love. And so he comes out there, and only David Letterman can actually joke about the fact that she slept with him. I think that's one of the funniest things, that he was wrong. He used the whole David Letterman feel of, you know, you can tell that it wasn't staged at all. It was just a guy saying, you know, I made a big mistake. I don't want other people telling my story. I'm going to say it the way I say it. And either you're going to believe me or you don't. And I believed every, I don't know about you, I believed every word he said.
I saw it live. I believed him too.
Right. And so that's the difference. So what's happening between Letterman and Tiger Woods these days? Tiger Woods has never been the same since then.
Won a major since.
No, and I still don't really trust him. Letterman, on the other hand,
won the Kennedy Center honor.
Of course he did, right?
And is retiring on his own terms. Yep. So, Saul, what do you do when a client lies to you?
It's interesting when a client – I can always tell when a client is not telling me the whole truth. So what I usually do is I'll sit back in a room with them. I'll close the door, and I'll say the same thing. I'll go, you know, I'm a big boy. I can handle this. And so I ask them to tell me everything there is to know, and I say, you know, I just want to let you know this is not going on TV. It's not going on the radio or in print. I just want to know exactly what's going on, and then we'll decide how we're going to handle all this. So, you know, and I make sure to tell the client up front before any of this happens, don't do anything like this. I mean, just be upfront, be truthful, and always remember, and I try to tell this to everybody, always remember that that there are cameras everywhere now. Everybody has a video camera on their phones. You know, you're always quotable. Even if you say you're off the record, you're always quotable. So try not to get into that situation. Don't use your power to do things that you think you can get away with.
Quickly, can people ever recover from scandals?
Sure, definitely. Look at Letterman. It's unbelievable. You know, there's quite a few examples out there. But, you know, Cosby, on the other hand, here at this time, you know, unless he comes out soon and actually talks to the media a little bit and actually starts talking to the victims and saying that he did something wrong, it's going to be a long time before things change for him.
Saul Markowitz is president of Markowitz Communications, and he's been talking to us about the intricacies of public relations damage control. Saul Markowitz, thanks so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. A reminder that as the year comes to an end, we're looking back on highlights of Essential Pittsburgh from 2014 and airing listener favorites. So make sure that your voice is heard and we consider your favorites. To vote, go to our website, WESA.FM, and click on Vote for the Best of Essential Pittsburgh 2014. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.